How's it going, everybody? How are you on this 3-day weekend? You know what today means? 8 days till the Seahawks' first game. Are you kidding me? Let's go. So, hey, Jen is back. For those of you that knew that she was gone, she was in Haiti, and she is back, but she's got some pretty severe jet lag. It was like a 36-hour trip back, and I think she ate some bad Haitian food early on in the trip as well and just wanted some recovery. So I get to do announcements, which I'm actually really excited about. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Somebody loves me. Thank you. So the first thing I want to mention is that we are going to do what I think is one of the maybe the coolest thing that we've ever done in the history of ministry with Brookview. The season that we're in is challenging. It is especially challenging, I think, as we go back to school with families with kids, especially families that have a single working parent or two working parents, but even for families that have an at-home parent, this is a really challenging season with school being online only for all the public schools. And so we really want to be able to come around families and say, let's help you do this. And so we are going to be starting something that we're calling The Village. And what we're going to do is open up our space next door and allow kids to come in the middle of the week, both for online school support and for just some socialization stuff. We're probably going to do kids' church programming in there during the week. We're probably going to offer some other kinds of courses, some STEM classes, and some other things for people, or at least support in that way. It is going to be incredible. I've been talking with Jen since she got back, and she is on fire for this. I cannot tell you all the things that have kind of come together to make this work, but we sent out a survey to all of our families at Brookview, as well as all of the soccer club families from the last couple of years, and asked them, would you be interested in this? And if so, what would your interest look like? And we're getting those surveys back, and it is obvious that we are a go with this thing. So it is going to be really, really cool. And I just want to say, if you have received a survey and you haven't responded and given us feedback, please do that, because it will help us know how to craft that time to best serve the majority of our people. But that is one of the coolest things that I've, you know, in this season of where there's so much that's hard, this is really, really, I think, going to be a huge blessing to a lot of kids and a lot of families. So very cool. Next thing is, we have, as we've been all through the summer, we have our online communication card. And so you can just go to brookviewchurch.com and then what do you click on? You click on contact, and then you get our communication card, and you can let us know about all kinds of things. Number one, if you have prayer requests, you want us to be praying, there's a team of people that pray every week for whatever prayer requests come in. So if you have prayer requests, let us know. But on top of that, one of the things that we've added through this whole season is that if you're struggling in some other way and you need some tangible support, whatever that kind of support might be, this is how you let us know. Let us know that you're in need, and then we can rally people to support you in whatever way makes sense. So if you have a need like that, please let us know. And if you're somebody who says, I want to be able to respond to needs as they come in, you can let us know that as well on your communication card. Last thing is, it's fall. And so what happens at Brookview every fall? What starts up every fall? Life groups. Let's go. We got life groups starting up. Okay. And this year there's going to be two streams of life groups. There's going to be online only for people that would prefer to have life group be an online only experience. We're also going to have in-person groups. We've got leaders that are willing to lead those. And if you've been in a group, if you were in a group last winter quarter and spring quarter, your group leaders that you had then should be reaching out to you to let you know what's happening and to find out if you're wanting to be in an in-person group or an online group, and then we can get you plugged in. If you were not in a group last winter or spring, but you're interested in this, please go to your online communication card and let us know that way. The other way that you could let us know is this amazing new technology that Brookview's using, which is you can text us. And so what you would do is, I think we have, oh, it's right there, it's already on the screen. So you go to that number, which I will not tell you what it is, you can see it, but you go to that number and you just text group, And that will let us know that you're interested, and we'll follow up and give you information. So, you guys, one last thing, and that is that this is Labor Day weekend. And last Labor Day weekend was kind of a momentous thing for our church because we added another full-time staff member who preached on Labor Day weekend last year on September 1st. And this is his one-year anniversary. And so I would like to just invite Casey to come up here and with his bride, with his beautiful bride, stand here. And I just want to praise God, and I want to pray for them in as they kind of embark on their second year. Casey came over for staff meeting this week, and we sang him happy. Brooklyn and I made a little cake. Jen was in Haiti. We made a little cake. We put a candle in there and sang happy anniversary to you.
It was great.
It was pretty great, and he devoured that hostess cake. So would you join me in just praying for these guys? God, I just thank you for Casey and Kaylin. I thank you for the ministry that they've had in this first year, but as we look toward a second year, even more so. And God, I pray that you would fill them with your spirit. I pray that you would fill them with passion and vision and creativity and grit, because ministry can be challenging. And I pray that you would fill them with all that they need to do, all that you're calling them to do, not what I'm calling them to do, but what you're calling them to do. And I pray for this year that you would blow the doors off of our church as we love one another and we love the community around us even better than we ever have. And I pray that you would use Casey and Kaylin as a central part of what you're doing in that mission. Would you bless the heck out of them? God, we love them and just are so thankful for them. In Jesus' name, amen.
How's it going, everybody? Yeah. Good evening. Yeah, really cool. Thanks, Jason. That was really cool. It's a cool landmark to hit. 1 year. Keeping going. Tonight, we're wrapping up the series that we've been in, that we've been calling, Who Do You Say That I Am? Who do you say that I am? We've been looking at the person of Jesus and who he is, and we've been in this series the majority of the summer. And I thought to myself, what better way to wrap up the series then to look at where do we fit in all of this? Like, what's our role? Where do we play? What role do we play? And tonight, I want to talk about the role of the second fiddle. The second fiddle. Now, I don't know how much you know or don't know about orchestra or, you know, the inner workings of an orchestra, so allow me to fill you in on how all that works. But the leading violin, or the first chair violin, is considered to be the most important instrument in the entire orchestra, the main guy. They have the title of concertmaster, which I think sounds kind of cool. They're second in command, only next to the conductor, and they get all the recognition. They get all the praise. They're up front and center. Like they're the person. They're the person. And the second chair violin, they don't get the same recognition, the same accolades and attention as the first violin. Leonard Bernstein, who's one of the greatest conductors of the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, was once asked what he thought the most difficult instrument to play was. And he replied without hesitation. He said, "The second fiddle. I can get plenty of first violinists, but to find someone who can play the second fiddle with enthusiasm, that's a problem. And if we have no second fiddle, then we have no harmony." The second fiddle, or the second violin, provides the harmony for the first violin, adding richness and beauty that would otherwise not be there without it. So you could argue that the second fiddle is just as important as the first chair. The first chair needs the second violin. Now, one of the all-time great second fiddle players, sidekicks, allies to Jesus in the entire Bible is John the Baptist. John the Baptist. He must become greater, I must become less. He must become greater, and I must become less. This was John's response when asked about the growing popularity of Jesus and Jesus' movement, his disciples. That was his response. He must become greater, and I must become less. A central theme to following Jesus, no doubt, but one of the hardest principles to live out constantly, day after day, month after month, year after year. And that's what we're asked to do year after year. The influence and impact of Jesus in our life should be coming through more and more and more. While the remnants of our old life and our past self and the pleasures of this world should diminish and become less. It sounds great, and I think we can all say, I can confidently say that we would all agree with that statement, but it's a lot easier said than done. And I think why that is because there's one common denominator between all of us, and that's this recognition of self. You know, the primary responsibility of the brain and our consciousness is to look out for self, right? And so this idea of diminishing self or lessening self is just kind of foreign. And yet John, he knew this. John knew this, and he was fully aware of this. Now, John the Baptist had a very interesting role to play in the story of Jesus. John was a prophet called by God, and it had been 400 years since the last prophet, Malachi. So John, he's the first prophet in over 400 years, and John, he was foretold 700 years earlier by the prophet Isaiah. So John 1:23. So John replied in the words of Isaiah the prophet, "I am the voice of one calling in the wilderness, make straight the way for the Lord." This passage here, it illustrates God's kind of master plan for John, that he would come before Jesus and set the foundation for Jesus, prepare the way for Jesus. So you could say that John was essentially like an ambassador to Jesus, coming before Jesus. Yeah, once Jesus appeared on scene, like John knew that his work was all but finished. And so the crazy thing about that is John was the guy. John was the guy. People thought that John might be the Messiah. That's how popular John was. That's how highly John was viewed. No one spoke like John spoke. No one acted like John acted. He was the guy. And yet he knew his role, and he was willingly able to give up the spotlight in order for Jesus. He must become greater, and I must become less. You could say that John played second fiddle to Jesus, and I think that's where we fit in all of this. That's the role that we're meant to play. In fact, it's the role that Jesus needs us to play. He needs us to play second fiddle just like he needed John. And the only difference between us and John is John came before Jesus' ministry, and we're here after, continuing on Jesus's ministry. But he needs us. He's counting on us to provide the harmony, just like the second chair provides for the first chair. But like Leonard Bernstein, he said, I can get plenty of first violinists. I can get plenty of those guys. But to find someone who will play the second fiddle with enthusiasm, and I think that's the key word here, to play the second fiddle with enthusiasm, with excitement, with joy, with passion. Because in recent history, the term second fiddle has actually become more of a slight than it has an encouragement. In fact, the Cambridge Dictionary defines second fiddle as to be less important or in a weaker position than someone else. To be less important or in a weaker position. And you can certainly have that negative lens on it, and I think, you know, maybe culture kind of grooms us to have that negative perspective. But I don't know, I don't think the second fiddle gets the respect they're due. Because without the second fiddle, there's no harmony. It doesn't sound right, it doesn't sound the same. But maybe for some of you, the example of an orchestra might not be the best approach. And that being said, I have something I need to apologize for. Like Jason said, I've been on staff for Brookview for almost a year now, just over a year. Started last September, preached last Labor Day weekend. But it's been recently brought to my attention that I've given somewhere around 15 messages, and in all those messages, I haven't given one sports analogy. Not one. And to put it plainly, I'm ashamed. But that changes today. So an orchestra might have a second fiddle player, but a football team also has an unsung hero. And that doesn't quite get the respect and the attention that they deserve. Now, we all know that the quarterback, he's the main guy. He's the number one guy, MVP, you know, someone who can perform under the pressure, execute, while simultaneously acting as the coach on the field. And for that reason, the quarterback is the number one paid player, usually. But oftentimes, the next highest paid player is this unsung hero. And it's the person who protects the quarterback. The left tackle, that's right, the left tackle, what's that? Exactly, is the most, in one of the most important players on the field because he protects the quarterback's blind side. And that is when a quarterback is going to throw, he can't see behind him. And so that's the most vulnerable place to be hit. He can see in front of him, but he can't see behind him. So the blind side is the most vulnerable place to be hit. That's often where you see like a season-ending or a career-ending hit happen is from the blind side. You might remember a movie starring Sandra Bullock called The Blind Side. It's based on a true story about a young man who was adopted into a family. His name was Michael Orr, and he actually ended up becoming an NFL left tackle. And I have a clip I want to show you. And in this clip, you're going to notice, so this was Michael, he's the biggest guy on the field, but he was new to football. He didn't want to hurt people. He didn't really know what to do. And so I'm going to let Sandra tell the story here. Watch this. Love the walk of shame at the end there. He goes and thanks her. So I've now used a sports analogy, and I played a video, so that makes up for. So just like an orchestra needs the second fiddle to bring harmony, a football team can't find rhythm and harmony if the quarterback doesn't have time to throw and he's not protected. And we know that all too well, being Seahawks fans, right? But we luckily have a magician who plays quarterback, so who needs a left tackle? When the second fiddle plays their role, the entire orchestra benefits. When the left tackle plays their role, the entire team benefits. When we play a supporting role to Jesus, the entire church body benefits. The entire community benefits. Jesus benefits. Question, are you okay playing second fiddle to Jesus? Because look at John the Baptist. He knew his purpose. He knew what he was doing. He was successful. He had enthusiasm. Like, what more can you ask for in life, right? But he knew he was playing a supportive role to a bigger picture that was bigger than himself. Much bigger than himself, and he knew that. He knew that. I think the question we need to ask ourselves is, can I relate to that? And if not, why? Why not? And I think if we're honest, it's because we like to play in the first chair. We like the first chair. And it's interesting when you look at the scene and you look at John's disciples and their reaction to Jesus' growing popularity, this is what they had to say. So it's in John chapter 3, starting in verse 22. It says, after this, Jesus and his disciples went out into the Judean countryside, where he spent time with them and baptized. Now John also was baptizing in Aenon near Salim, because there was plenty of water and people were coming and being baptized. This was before John was put in prison. An argument developed between some of John's disciples and a certain Jew over the matter of ceremonial washing. They came to John and said to him, Rabbi, that man who you were with on the other side of the Jordan, the one you testified about, look, he is baptizing, and everyone is going to him. John, you were the man. You were the guy. Like, everyone was amazed by you. Everyone was going to you, and now they're going to this guy. Like, what's going on? And that leads me to the first point I want to make, and that is playing second fiddle to Jesus helps prevent us from growing prideful within ourselves. Playing second fiddle to Jesus helps prevent us from growing prideful within ourselves. Remember, it had been 400 years of silence from God. No prophetic messages, nothing. And all of a sudden, here comes John, and he starts preaching, and the crowds are flocking to him, the crowds love him, and like, if it were today, he would have been on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, he'd be on CNN and Fox News at the same time. Like, everyone would be coming to see this phenomenon, and he's preaching this message, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand, and he's getting the glory, and he's getting the shine. And he develops, of course, this little band of his posse, you know, his disciples. And there comes a time when this carpenter, this man from Judea would come in. And John's disciples are like, okay, like, cool. I don't really know what's happening. Like, let's get back to what we were doing, John. And a certain time comes where Jesus starts to become more and more. And less people start to go to John and his disciples. But John, he fully understood that. Like, he knew what was going on. And I think it would be easy to kind of have that mindset of like, no, we started this. Like, we gathered the masses. We started this movement. We did this. You know, and to have that kind of prideful sense about it. I remember a time when I started to first speak at Brookview. It was around 2014. I was, I think, 22 or 23 years old, and I remember wrestling with some of these kind of thoughts. You know, out of all the people that Jason could have asked to speak at church, he asked me. And, you know, he must see something in me. I must be doing something pretty good for him to ask me. And wrestling with the pride of that responsibility. And then I started to consider ministry and college and all of that. And I wanted to become one of these celebrity pastors that you see. You know, the ones who get invited to the big conferences and the big gatherings, because then what would people think of me then? Right? And you know, I'd be the guy. And let me tell you, that was 100% first chair mentality, 100%. You know, I'll get popular and I'll be well known and people will think highly of me and it'll be because of me and because of my skill set and because of my giftings and all the hard work I've put in. Those were some of the thoughts I was wrestling with. And maybe you can relate in some way. You know, rather than giving like God credit for some of the positive changes you've made in your life and the gifts and the abilities that you've been given, you know, maybe it's like, no, I want my boss and my friends and my family to think, no, that's all me. That's all me. I did this. I created that. That's all Casey. That's, you know, I did this. And I think why we do that is because it feels good, right? It feels good. But there are two reasons. Two main reasons why pride is so dangerous and considered to be one of the most harmful and dangerous sins. And the first reason to that is because it keeps us from coming to Jesus. It keeps us from coming to Jesus because my confidence isn't in God. It's in me. It's in me. Like, Jesus can come along for the ride, but like, I'm going to be in the driver's seat. And you know, he can back me up. He can bring the harmony to my lead, and it's scary, because I can remember so many times in my life where that's been my mentality. It's been my mentality, and when things go wrong, it's pride that keeps us from going to Jesus. Because then I'd have to admit that I did something wrong, and I didn't know best. And you know, I could have. Done something to fix that, but no, it's pride that keeps us, and that's the first reason why pride is so dangerous. And I'm extremely thankful for this journey that I've been on over the past 4 years, because it's been incredibly humbling, incredibly humbling. I remember a conversation I had one time with God, and it's always interesting saying that, because it wasn't an audible conversation, but you know when the Holy Spirit is moving, and it's tugging on your spirit, like you just know. And this was one of those moments. And I was praying one of those audacious prayers, you know, those, God, I'll do anything you want kind of prayers. I'll go anywhere. I'll go to Africa. I'll go to China. I'll do whatever you want me to do. Just use me, you know, one of those kind of prayers. And this was a really pivotal moment in my life because I felt God say in response to my prayer, I can't use you because you don't love my people enough. And it was like being hit with a ton of bricks. Because here I am halfway across the world in pursuit of ministry and in pursuit of God. And in this moment, he was revealing to me, hey, part of this and part of what you're doing has to do with your own glory and with your own recognition and your own notoriety and your own pride. And since that moment, he has been taking me on this journey of not just learning how to play second fiddle, but learning how to love playing second fiddle. And because if I'm going to allow God to transform me and transform my life and my heart and my motives, then like John, he must become greater and I must become less. For look what John said next. The one who comes from above is above all. The one who is from the earth belongs to the earth and speaks as one from the earth. The one who comes from heaven is above all. At the end of the day, we're merely humans. And we're flawed, and we will always have, like, selfish motives, always. There's no way that we're not. Oops, sorry, guys. That was the Jimmy John's. That was the first time. Jason. I was really trying for that not to happen. oh, boy. At the end of the day, we're merely humans, guys, right? Come on. That wouldn't have happened to Jesus. Are you kidding me? Oh, man. No, I'm okay. Thank you. But so at the end of the day, we're merely humans. That's why Paul, he famously wrote, I do not understand what I do, for what I want to do, I don't do, but what I hate, I do. I hear you laughing. And that's Paul. Like, Paul was next level. Paul was like super disciple, and he's still saying that kind of stuff. He's saying, the things I don't want to do, I do. The things I want to do, I don't do. I can relate to that. And John knew his role. John knew his role really well. Listen to Matthew chapter 11. This is what Jesus had to say about John the disciple. He said, truly I tell you, among those born of women, there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. What kind of man would John have had to be for Jesus to say that? Of everyone who has ever lived up until this point, no one was greater than John the Baptist. High praise coming from the highest king. And John didn't allow prestige and praise and accolades to trip him up, to allow him to stumble. He stayed in his lane, and he provided the harmony for Jesus. That's who John was. So we've seen that playing second fiddle helps keep our pride in check, but it also allows us to celebrate and champion the gifts and successes of others, of those around us. Because when we realize that, you know, I've been given certain gifts, and you've been given certain gifts, and if we just work together, then we can accomplish a lot more than we can individually. And we can stop competing, we can stop looking at each other as competition, and we can just bind together and do this thing. And that's why Paul in 1 Corinthians 12, he talked about the body of Christ, the church, as a literal body. So this is 1 Corinthians 12, in verse 12, he said, the human body has many parts, but the many parts make up one whole body. So it is with the body of Christ. So the church is made up of many parts, and each one is just as important as the next. And he goes on to say, yes, the body has many different parts, not just one part. If the foot says, I am not a part of the body because I am not a hand, that doesn't make it any less part of the body. And if the ear says, I'm not a part of the body because I am not an eye, would that make it any less part of the body? If the whole body were an eye, how would you hear? If the whole body were an ear, how would you smell anything? And what I love about this is how simple Paul keeps it. He's like, if everyone was the same, then like nothing would get done. And if we all had the same gifts, then think of all the things that wouldn't get done. Earlier I said that there's two reasons why pride was so dangerous. And the first one was because it keeps us from coming to Jesus. Because it, you know, our confidence isn't in God, it's in myself. So the second reason why pride is so dangerous is because it keeps us in competition with each other. We're called to be neighbors, and that's what Jesus was once asked, hey, what's the most important law out of all of them? Like, sum it all up. And he said, love God and love people. Love God and love your neighbor. And here's the thing about pride. Pride keeps you from loving your neighbor because pride wants the best. Pride wants the best things. Pride wants the best kids. Pride wants the best job. It wants the best promotion. Pride wants the best everything. And so everyone else is in competition to you. Because what you want, if they get it, there's no cheering them on. There's no being in their corner. There's no, like, good for you, because you got what I want. That's what pride does. And that's why pride is considered to be one of the greatest sins, because if Jesus can sum up the whole of all the law to love God and love people, pride does just the opposite. It keeps us from coming to God, and it keeps us in competition with each other. I remember in college kind of working through this. I had a really close friend group of about 10 guys, and great guys. We're all go-getters, leaders in the church, leaders amongst the college, and I'll tell you what, it was really hard to not be jealous and insecure of these guys. For instance, some of these guys, just the most gifted communicators that you would ever see. They'd get up on a stage without no notes, nothing, and just give the most powerful just message you'll ever hear. Just hits home in every single way, and they'd get off the stage and I'd be like, man, like, I love you, but I hate you. Others were gifted with their intellect, the ability to, like, study and internalize and understand confusing doctrine and theories, and could talk about it as if they had, like, studied it for years, like just that one subject. And we'd all be hanging out and talking. I'm like, do you know what they're talking about? Because I don't know what they're talking about. Others had really big personalities. And, you know, just the ones that, like, just attract people. You know, you spend 10 minutes with them and you love them. Not me, I don't think. Others had the ability to, like, lead big teams in really big capacities. Any normal person would have a panic attack, but they're just, like, one hand tied behind their back. Yeah, I got it. Like, just really, really, So all that to say, you know, my closest friends, like, just feeling jealous and resentful and envious and bitter, I would just sit around like, why don't I have that? Why don't I have those abilities and those gifts? And, you know, I was just in that headspace. And in that headspace, you can't be a good friend. And you can't be in their corner. And you can't like, champion them. I wasn't able to, like, to just love them, because in a way they were my competition. I was trying to measure up to them. Now, what's interesting is I wasn't always the first choice in, like, those different categories I just listed off that they were really good at. But what I was really good at was, like, developing people and, like, taking, like, new students in and, like, you know, helping them grow and putting together these, like, healthy teams that were, like, had the right attitude and the right heart. So where, like, my friend might preach circles around me, I could, like, lead and put together teams and develop people better than they could. And, like, over time, God, he showed me, like, hey, stop focusing on what you don't have and focus on the things you do have. The abilities, the gifts that you're passionate about, that I've given you. Like, stop, like, trying to be an eye if you're not an eye. Stop trying to be an ear if you're not an ear. There are things to be done that, like, I need you to do that they can't do. So let's just do that. And I loved it. Like, my friend, so now these guys, I looked at them now as, like, people with gifts and attributes that my gifts and attributes actually complement. And now working together, we can do a whole lot more than we could individually. And we can make a greater impact, and it's just better. And so that's what pride does. That's if we allow it to get into us, that's what it does. It keeps us in the space of feeling like we're lacking things, where it's like, no, you got plenty. You're just trying to be an eye. I want you to be a hand, you know? And I can't sit here and tell you what part is yours to play. That's between, you know, you and God, and you know yourself better than I do, but taking time to know, like, hey, I need to stop trying to just wish I was more than what I'm not. And so now the cool thing is, given the right circumstance, given the right moment, the right person, I'm happy to play second fiddle, not only to Jesus, but to whoever, to my friend, to my leader, to my boss, to my wife, because actually that's going to produce a better outcome. That's going to produce more lives being changed, more power, more transformation, right? And I think that's the heart, that's the perspective that I think Jesus looks at and goes, I can use that. I can use that. That's what I'm looking for. What are your strengths? What are your abilities? What are the gifts that are unique and special to you? What is it Jesus needs you to do that no one else can do? Because maybe he's just waiting for you to provide the harmony. Last week, Jason, he talked about the merry band of misfits that were the 12 disciples and the greater kind of community of Jesus followers, and how their resume and who they were individually couldn't have been any different. You had, you know, Simon the Zealot, who was just set on rebellion and taken over Rome, and you had Matthew the tax collector, and you had fishermen and tradesmen. You had Nicodemus, who was a Pharisee, you know, it's the religious elite, you know, others who opened their homes and you know, provided hospitality and food, and you had people who looked after the orphans, the wives, the kids, you had people who looked after finances and money, like all of that. And they all complemented one another, and they complemented Jesus. And what they did was they brought harmony to the community and to Jesus' ministry and his message. And just like them, what we can provide as a whole is way more effective than what we can do individually. And so if we're willing to come together and look at the bigger picture that we're a part of, and if we're willing to play second fiddle, then we can have that too. We can have that in this community and make a bigger impact than what we could do individually. And that leads me to the third point I want to make, and that is that playing second fiddle to Jesus leads to a more rich and full life. Let's go back to where we started with the first and second violinist. We talked about how the first violin needs the second one to provide the harmony, but we can't forget that the second violin needs the first one to provide the lead, right? Each one individually is missing something. Each one individually isn't as full and as rich as it could be without the other. And no matter how much we try, no matter how hard we try, we will never be able to play the lead as good as Jesus, never. And John knew it, John knew it. John had this to say about Jesus. He said, I'm not even worthy to untie the straps of his sandals. That's what John said about Jesus. I'm not even worthy to touch his sandals. And if you remember, Jesus said he was the greatest human ever. Can't even touch his sandals. And he's the one who said he must become greater and I must become less. And Jesus taught this as well. In Luke 9:23, Jesus is recorded saying, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. Deny themselves. Deny themselves. Again, going back to those prideful tendencies, you know, the self first, you know, self gain, self advancement, putting those aside and thinking God first, people first, kingdom first. And when we play the lead, when we try to play the lead, when we take charge and take the driver's seat, we will always think world first. Always. We always will. We'll think of the prestige and the prominence and the worth and the accolades and all the stuff. And that's why John, if you remember, he said, the one who comes from above is above all. The one who comes from the earth belongs to the earth and speaks as one from the earth. The one who's from heaven is the one who can give us that kingdom mindset. We're not going to get there our own. If we try and play lead, We're not going to get there ourselves. Has to be Jesus. Has to be Jesus. And here's the thing that I think we really need to grasp and understand in all this. Second fiddle isn't the short end of the stick. It's not the raw end of the deal for us. It's not. It's not like, okay, Jesus, like I'll let you have this one. No. If you remember, I gave a message 3 weeks ago, and I talked about how life with Jesus is an adventure. It's an adventure. Like the 12 disciples were on the greatest adventure of all time. And it's because they followed Jesus. They lived a rich and full life because they followed Jesus. They let Jesus lead, and they provided the harmony. They provided the harmony. And so when we read, like, we need to become less. We need to deny ourselves or die to ourselves in order that Jesus can become more and the lead, it's going to lead to a more rich and a more full life. I can get plenty of first violinists, but finding one to play the second fiddle with enthusiasm, that's the problem. Like, what if Jesus was saying that? Man, they always want to play the lead, and they want me to play backup. But only if they knew, if they just let me take the lead, all the things that we could accomplish. All the things we could accomplish. The beautiful thing about the second fiddle is that it's not about us. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's about the church. It's about your friends. It's about your family. It's about what you can do. And I was thinking about this, and I was like, do I know any really good second fiddle players? And I do. First person that came to mind, Johnny. 100%. And it's not because of anything he does, it's because of his heart. Anything, hey, can you do this? Got it. Can you do this? Yep. Can you do this? Yep. I don't think I've ever heard him say no. And I love that. Because it's like, what needs to be done? I'm happy to fill in. And again, like I said, it's not about any one gift or talent. It's a heart set. It's a mindset. It's the, yeah, no, I'm happy to play harmony. Because if this is getting done, then we're all moving together. It's a flow. It's a harmony. And I love that. And again, I don't know what that looks like for you individually. But maybe ask God. Spend some time. Hey, am I spending too much time trying to be something else that you don't need from me? Because it looks good and it sounds good. And it gets more praise, and it gets more, I don't know. If we can learn to play the second fiddle, not just learn, but learn to love to play the second fiddle, because we're letting Jesus take the lead, we're fine taking a step back and just playing harmony, because it produces something better and bigger and grander, that's what I want. The band, you guys can come up and join me and take your spot. We're going to worship, and I would just really encourage you guys, let's take some time, not just to worship, but to talk to God, to spend time with God. Hey, where do you need me? I want to be your second fiddle. I want to provide the harmony. Where do you need me? And am I doing it? Am I playing that for you? God, we thank you so much for who you are. I thank you for these examples in the Bible, Lord, to encourage us, to motivate us, to look at people who did it right. I know it's a daily struggle, trying to get there, trying to deny ourselves and to let you shine, to let you play the lead. It's a daily struggle. But I know you're there. I know you're there with us in those daily choices, in those daily decisions. You're there. Even if I don't sense you, you are there. So, Lord, in this moment, I pray that you would just tug on the hearts of your people. Maybe plant some seeds, plant some ideas. Hey, this is where I see you shining with me. Let me take lead. You can take harmony. But Lord, just speak to your people. Have your way, Lord. And we love you so much.